Hello, this is Grant Bartley, and you're listening to the Philosophy Now radio show. And today we're going to be talking about feminist film theory with Terry Murray, who's the author of Feminist Film Theory, A Teacher's Guide, and she's also teaches film studies at the Hampstead College of Fine Art. And Anya Steinbauer, who is the president of Philosophy for All, a London philosophy meetup group, which we'll also be talking a bit about later, just for those who are interested. And she's also the co-founder of the London School of Philosophy, which has recently opened, which we'll also mention a bit later. But first, let's get into feminist film theory. OK, first of all, I want to ask some general questions about feminism and film theory, if that's OK, for, you know, people who really don't know very much about it at all, like myself. First of all, what is feminism? Is it more than progressing the cause of women in a male-dominated world? Who would like to go first? Terry.
Well, I think if you look it up in the dictionary, as I meant to do to prepare for today, I wanted to bring in the dictionary definition. I think it's simply a doctrine of opposition to male sexism. Uh-huh. But what I typically ask my students is, when you hear the word feminism, what do you think about? What kind of connotations does the word carry?
I guess for a lot of people it's women in dungarees and Dr. Martin's boots, but I'm sure that's not what it means. What does it mean to you, Anya?
Well, I mean, I would actually give it a very wide meaning. I would, not just say that it's a struggle of women, you know, in opposition to patriarchy, but I really think it's in the widest sense an interest in issues that concern women, the situation of women, in the lives of women. So I would say anyone who has an interest in this particular perspective, you know, how do things affect women? You know, what are women's lives like? Basically, I would say anyone who's interested in that is a feminist in the widest sense.
Well, I mean, that the first opposition that would bring up to me is, why not masculism? But I don't want to go down that route. What I want to ask is, why is feminism still needed in the enlightened West of the 21st century? How much remains to be achieved for feminists until female equality is gained with men?
Well, it's not just a matter of equality, is it? It really is an interest in the specific situation of women, because, you know, women's lives very often are different from men's lives, and I think that is interesting and it needs to be made an issue. Why should we talk about it instead of men? Well, because we've been talking about men for hundreds and hundreds of years. Let's talk about women.
But I got the impression that it was about advancing the cause of women rather than just talking about women.
It can be about that, but it's also about exploring, especially as feminist philosophers. That's what we try to do. We try to explore the feminist perspective, try to explore what does it mean to be a woman. What is a woman?
Can I just go back for a second to this definition of feminism? Most of my students, and I probably most people listening to the show, when they hear feminism, they think part of the definition is, well, feminists are women. Yeah. And that's not necessarily true at all.
No.
A lot of very good feminists have been men, and a lot of sexists have been women. So you don't have to be female to be feminist. And you don't have to be male to be sexist.
It strikes me that you're using two... I mean, you've got two different ideas of what feminism is. To you, Anya, it seems to be that it's just an interest in women's lives or from a women's... how things appear from women's perspectives, whereas for Terry, it seems to be more about overcoming prejudice against women.
Yeah, well, to me that would be very much part of it as well. But but I would just say it's even more than that. Sorry, Terry.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's overcoming sexism, which exists still in our culture, even though we might have formal legal equality before the law, and we might have equal pay. I'm not sure about that, actually. We don't have equal representation in government yet.
I think there's still a lot of problems.
Where we still lag behind, I think, is definitely in the visual media, in the representation of women.
Right.
And that's very clear when I go to my gym, and I'm looking at six screens, and usually four or five of them are with male protagonists, whatever the program is, doing most of the talking, most of the action.
Okay.
And when women are represented, it's in very trivial
roles. We'll talk more specifically about the representation of females later, but I just want to get a bit of the groundwork done now. Is feminism the same as feminist theory?
No, I wouldn't say that. What's that's the case. Then? Well, I mean, there's also feminist activism, which can be based on feminist theory. Right. But, you know, a lot of activist work has to be done. Since you asked, you know, why do we still need feminism in this enlightened age of ours? Well, you know, there still are a lot of problems, such as even in this country, you know, domestic violence is a huge right. problem. You know, so on average, 2 women a week are killed by a male partner or former partner in this country. So that's, you know, that's quite a lot. And, of course, internationally, there are a lot of problems economically. You know, women perform 66% of the world's work, and they produce 50% of the world's food, but they earn only 10%, and you know, they own only 1% of the property.
So, really, the real problem with feminism is a global one rather than a national one.
On all levels.
Uh huh. Yeah. Okay. What? Oh, moving on to film theory. What is film theory? I mean, it sounds obvious, but what does film theory tell us about film?
Oh gosh, well, many things. Okay. I mean, you know, within film theory, you might be looking at various critical approaches. One of them is representation, yeah. not only of gender but of race. Okay. You might be looking at national cinema, how it represents class or culture.
So you're studying the messages that are implicit in the film, or explicit even.
That's
sometimes.
That's part of film studies, film yeah. theory, sure.
Anything? I mean, is there anything other than that?
Oh well, it's looking at the narrative conventions in film. Uh-huh. You know, you can use theoretical models like that of Levi Strauss, looking at binary oppositions in film, or mm-hmm. Todorov's model, which is linear. Uh-huh. You know, there's all kinds of film theory.
So there's lots of different ways of looking at film.
Sure.
Yes. There are. Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, from that, what is feminist film theory? How does it differ from film theory per se? I mean, what is specifically feminist about it?
Well, I suppose okay. it's applying all these various you know, techniques and ideas to the feminist perspective.
So, uh-huh. so I think so it's, give it's, me an example as, how you would do that, just briefly.
As that. Well, I think an important example, which I think you're perhaps going to discuss later on, is the idea of the male gaze. So, uh-huh. you know, what kind of perspective is actually implicit in a lot of the films that we're seeing, and how does it affect women? How does it portray women?
Sure.
But also, consequentially, how does it affect women's lives?
And how does it affect the viewer's idea of what women are because what they see as normal on the screen? Basically.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, in film studies, sometimes they talk about gendered film studies so that mm-hmm. we're aware that we're not just talking about how females are represented, we're also talking about stereotypes in how males mm-hmm. are represented yeah. as well. Cinematic representations have been mediated historically, predominantly through the eyes and desires of men.
Yeah.
And so the feminist interrogation of this is looking at film as a very powerful medium through which relationships of dominance have been maintained, subverted, and renegotiated.
Okay. Why is it necessary? Why is it necessary to have a particularly feminist film theory?
Well, it's not necessary, but if you care about women and how they're affected by visual media, uh-huh. And if you care about men and the stereotypes, I mean, to think that it's not important is to think that visual media have no impact on life whatsoever.
Okay. So it's about clarifying what people are letting into their minds as much as anything else, would you say?
Yes, and, you know, controlling our public perception of women.
Okay. Just sort of a couple of more general questions. How does feminist film theory differ from feminist theory for the other arts, such as feminist literary theory or feminist aesthetics? And are there, like, different schools of theory, feminist film theory in particular?
Well, I mean, there are all kinds of theories about feminist aesthetics, you know, some philosophical theories. A lot of them are philosophical theories. And, well, of course, it depends on the medium. You know, there are a lot of questions, say, classically about why there haven't been many great women artists. Uh-huh. You know, so questions of that kind, questions that don't particularly affect the medium of film, which is rather uh-huh. a new medium. Depending on the medium, there will be particular questions that are important. Important, and that's.
So, what would be particularly important for film then? What sort of question for feminist film theory would be particularly important?
Well, again, how does, you know, as Terry said, how does you know, film impact on our lives in terms of shaping our perceptions, you know, educating our views of what the world is actually like, what women are actually like. Mm. And philosophically speaking, this is interesting because, you know, we might actually learn from this what it means to be a woman, and we might actually have to very critically examine whether we're getting particular myths presented here as absolute truths, and to what degree this is a problem in terms of consequences for real life, how women are being treated, and how girls are brought up as well.
I want to get back to the kind of basis of your question here. All these public art forms, whether it's art, literature, television, film, they're not windows onto reality. They're constructions, representations of reality. And I think what feminist theory has in common in looking at all of those various art forms is the ways in which men, as the dominant authors of those various forms, have perceived women, since it's through the male desire and through the male perspective that images of women have been mediated. So that's what they all have in common. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you go back to the second wave feminism, one of the emphases was on the public-private division of labor. So men were seen to have...
So when did the second wave of feminism, when was that?
Well, really from the 60s onward. Uh-huh. And I think one of the things they emphasized was that this sexual division of labor, whereby men dominate public life and women are kind of relegated to the domestic sphere or the home. Well, you know, art, literature, these are all public forms of expression. And as such, they have traditionally and historically been dominated by men. And the conventions that they employ have been created largely by men.
But I think quite importantly, since Terry is saying, you know, this shapes the way that men look at women, but of course importantly it informs also how women look at women and what women believe is expected of them, what they ought to be, what they should be aspiring to. And very importantly, you know, young girls think about, well, what kinds of future lives are possible for them, and this is what they see.
Sure. So briefly, what would you want, well, if you could both take stabs at answering this, what would you want everybody listening to this show to understand about the movies they watch in relation to feminist concerns? If, you know, your brief one conclusion or your main conclusion about what you'd want them to understand in feminist terms.
I think importantly, I would say that that films matter in terms of shaping reality, that they don't represent reality, as Terry said, you know, but of course their particular perspectives on reality, myths, perhaps, as one might say, as a lot of feminists would say, but that they have an impact on how people live and think. And I think, therefore, it needs to be taken very seriously. That's what I would really like to understand.
Okay. And Terry, what would you say is the main point that you'd want to people to
that's a really hard,
about feminist film?
That's a hard question to put into one point. However, I think probably one of the main points is that people understand that representations of women are just that. They're artificial constructions, and they've been made by men. And women can imitate those representations, but women have had very little role in constructing them.
Uh-huh. Okay, thanks. We're going to talk more specifically about the film, the way films are structured, after this song, which is Video, I believe. Hello, that was Video by India Irie or something like that. But I'm Grant Bartley from Philosophy Now magazine, and you're listening to the Philosophy Now radio show. I'm here with Anya Steinbauer, Philosophy for All, and Terry Murray, author of Feminist Film Theory, and we're discussing feminist film theory. We've talked a little bit about what it generally means, and now I want to focus for a little while on its specific theories or ideas. So first, Terry, what do you mean when you refer in your book to the Hollywood film business as producing a hegemonic system of meaning, or hegemonic, whatever you want to say?
Okay, well, it's a fairly unified system of meaning. Now, this is partly, we'll talk later about the Hays Code and so on. But just to give an example, you know, we might not necessarily agree with the pro-American or even xenophobic subtext of many Hollywood action films, but we're all kind of seduced into watching them. We sort of feel that we're better off watching them, and those are the ones that are there for our consumption, whether we like it or not. Yeah. Those are the ones that are hyped, you know, by the big distribution.
Yeah, they may not be so great, but that's all we got, so we're going to enjoy it.
Right. It means just basically domination or control by one social political group or ideological system over its rivals, over others.
The Hollywood studio heads, they've got basically domination of how we're to look at things through their influence on Hollywood.
Yes, yeah? Global domination.
And but what does it mean, a system of meaning?
Well, this is the conventions through which we perceive the world. It also it not only involves visual conventions, but narrative conventions.
Mm-hmm. So
values, messages that are ideological and unchanging.
Yeah, I was going to say values, actually. So do you feel that particular values that sort of keep coming up and, you know, that well, you wish to
absolutely
critique?
Well,
yes, and they are.
Like what sort of some values are good values, clearly, well, like, you know, we should all be nice to each other, whatever. But what values would you particularly, as you say, critique that are in the Hollywood system as they produce films normally? I mean, obviously, there are always exceptions.
Yeah, I mean, with respect to women's lives, of course, you know, how women are often portrayed, you know, what is expected of women.
Can you be more specific?
I can be more specific.
Give me an example, for instance.
Absolutely. I was going to get that. So, uh-huh. I mean, women generally, you know, are supposed to be attractive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, even where women are, you know, now portrayed as assertive, but they always have to be attractive.
Uh-huh.
You hardly see any unattractive attractive women, and they can't be single normally. And where you find
they've always got to have a partner, or
absolutely,
or
aspiring to.
Uh-huh.
And where you find a not so attractive single women, they don't do very well. For instance, in the film Misery,
uh-huh.
which you know, I think is done after a Stephen King story. The woman is a sort of middle-aged, not very attractive, overweight, bitter, single female, and, you know, of course, she turns out to be crazy.
Of course, yes, because all the attractive
she would have to
ones
be mad,
are,
right?
are either totally evil or totally good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, basically, it's just being theatrical,
you're
isn't it?
Serious.
What is wrong with it?
Well, because women are always defined in relation to men,
right.
so as male partners, as potential or actual mothers, you know, sex objects, and there isn't really much more than that.
Let me ask you. Mm-hmm. Let's say that an alien from another planet who had no particular sexual attraction to humans came to this planet and watched the box office top 10 films from, I don't know, last month or any month in the past 50 years. Having watched those films and therefore studied human social interaction and humanity as a species,
mm-hmm.
which sex do you suppose they would address to solve problems such as how to get their spaceship back to Mars?
Well, you know, yeah, I see what you mean. It's going to be the male, because the male is always the protagonist, isn't it? And the, well, always, often, the protagonist, and the female is somebody, sort of an add-on for the sake of bringing in the female viewers, I suppose. I suppose, your basic complaint about the Hollywood system of meaning, that it misrepresents females in this very biased way?
Well, if you look across most major genres, whether it's horror, gangster, western, uh-huh. action adventure, even you know, the so-called female genres, well, there are some genres that are relegated as, you know, chick flicks genre, where there are female protagonists. But again, their main goal in life is to get a guy, and that will then validate their existence.
Uh-huh.
But in those other genres, you can look at the roles that men play and look at the roles that females play. And imagine, instead of an alien now, we've got a young female mind who's watching this. And it's not just, you know, about male and female. It's also about representations of ethnicity and race. This is a very white male medium, and it has been, because they're the ones who've been in control of producing these representations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's a conscious, intentional thing. It's simply that they're making films that please them and are flattering to them.
Yes, let's think about what's so wonderful about film, because there are a lot of things that film can do that, say, philosophy can't do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard for me to admit this.
Not
just communicate. It does more than that. Philosophy can communicate, but film really fires the imagination.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to show someone what their lives can be like, then instead of describing and theorizing, what you do is you show them a film, you show them an image, maybe a play in the theater, a piece of literature. That really helps them imagine what their future lives can be like. So why not use this wonderful medium to show the range of possibilities that are actually there? You know, the range of possibilities of what your life can be like. But instead of doing that, most films will just give you a very narrow picture of what is legitimate in terms of the life that you ought to be pursuing. That's true, of course, for men as well as for women.
Yeah.
You know, so gender roles affect not just women, but here we're interested in women. And as far as women are concerned, there are not a lot of possibilities. You've got to find your man. Perhaps you can do a few other things. You can pursue a few interests if you like. But really, conventionally, you should still be an add-on to a man.
So basically, you'd like the film industry to show a more wider range of options for women.
And this is what feminism is about.
Right.
You know, feminism is not one thing, but feminism is not one but many.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there are many feminist theories, many feminist outlooks, and ultimately, as far as there is an agenda, I think it's about giving women a choice.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, I'm for increased choice. Yeah, why not?
I just hung on to this because I thought, I know I'm going to need this one day.
Okay.
Because I saw
a clip in her hand,
this
listeners.
Is a newspaper clip that I just came across in the Metro newspaper, which everyone else is forced upon them if they go on the tube. The headline is "Spidey's Fighting for Diversity," and it's just about this new comic book hero, new Spider-Man, who is black Latino.
They replaced the old Spider-Man.
And I like what it says here. It says the real world, in all its diversity, is what this black Spider-Man is reflecting.
Uh-huh.
And the same holds true for, you know, films that show women in positions other than, you know, the helper, the servant, the victim, the girlfriend. If you show women as protagonists and real people, hopefully you're reflecting the real world in all its diversity.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are some things I could say in criticism of that, but I'll save them till later. But moving on from what we've just been saying, what is the male gaze, as it's referred to by feminist theories, in terms of movie making, and how does it differ from the female gaze in movies? And what do you mean when you say that in most films the female is mainly an object for a male's gaze?
Okay, a lot of questions there.
Uh-huh.
I'll try to just first introduce the male gaze. This comes from Laura Mulvey's famous essay, Visual Pleasure in Narrative Cinema, from 1975.
Okay.
So she's the one who kind of coined the term. And she talks about a lot of things. Part of her theory is drawn from Freud and Lacan. And she says, the female figure to the male is kind of represents a threat. Why? Because she represents castration.
That's
so,
very Freudian. That's very
To be honest, I am pretty wary of accepting any kind of psychological speculation about men or other people in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I go along with this entirely. But I think what's more interesting in her theory is not how she describes the male unconscious looking for avenues of escape so much. But she looks at cinema and the three looks of cinema and how each of them is constructed as male.
Mm-hmm.
And those three looks are the look between characters. So the characters who are looking at other characters are usually male, and we're given them for identification. And then the crew filming, which is usually male directors, male cameramen, and so on. And then the audience is assumed to be male, which is why female bodies are displayed in a certain way as spectacle, as objects.
Who assumes them to be male? The makers of the movies?
Yes, which are men. So they're making a film that they themselves would want to watch.
Is it because they would want to watch it, or is it because they figure that's if they make it for males, that's the way they're going to be the most commercial.
Well, that's the, again, philosophically, that is the important point, that really humanity has been identified with the male yes. perspective, you know, whatever, you know, the male ideal. And I think even quite unreflectedly, you know, automatically, filmmakers would make films for men because, well, this is what humanity is.
Yes. I mean, having male protagonists in all these art forms, whether it's literature, art, or film, tells the consumers of those various art forms that males are the generic human being and females are identified in opposition to that.
Yes.
But there's that would be the typical male perspective. How would a female gaze on movies differ from a male gaze? I mean, if you were a female director, for instance, rather than a female
How would we ever
audience.
Know?
but there are. I mean, you give examples of Jane Campion and Kate Bigelow and other people in your book, which,
yes.
and then you say what's particularly female about the way they look at what they're directing. So, I mean, if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think what they're doing is investigating men, for once, instead of men always investigating women.
Right, okay.
That's a reversal already. If you look at Jane Campion's film The Piano.
Mm-hmm.
The whole story is told through the perspective of Ada, this 19th century woman who is kind of given in marriage to Stuart, who lives in New Zealand. And she's the whole opposition, the binary oppositions of the film, pose Stuart and his values against Baines and his values. And Baines comes out, you know, the more attractive character, but to Ada, it's her who's judging the two men. And so, you know, we see their bodies on display through her point of view. We see, for example, Stuart's body cropped and in soft light, the way you would stereotypically see the female body cropped. We see, for example, Baines's nudity in the sex scenes before we see Ada's nudity. We see her as a sexual agent, not just as a passive, you know, recipient of male lust. All those things, I think, are suggestive of a way of seeing men through a female perspective.
So it's basically about seeing things from a female perspective rather than a male perspective.
Yes.
Okay. Anya, when feminists say they want women to be portrayed authentically in film or other media, what do they mean?
Well, I'm not quite clear about what they mean. You know, I think what they mean is that there should be a certain honesty about this.
Right.
But, I mean, there certainly isn't one description that would fit, one particular portrayal that would fit. But again, you know, since you know, feminist perspectives are many, you know, there isn't one authenticity that would give a true perspective or portrayal.
I mean, what is generally meant by authenticity? I mean, my problem is if you represent women in one way, then there's always going to be an exception to that. And, you know, you can't represent all women in one film, for instance.
No,
so what does it mean to represent...
But you shouldn't aspire to that. No, I think that's all right. I think there should be an honesty and you should ask them. You know, you should, as Terry has just explained, you know, you should portray things from a particular female perspective, but it can always just be a particular perspective. I mean, that's the thing about film, right? I mean, you know, film doesn't deal with universals, but with particular situations.
And so it
becomes part of a discourse.
I think
that's what's important.
Want men to be represented more authentically.
Well, sure.
In other words, less of
I'm
a gap between the real men that we know and these kind of impossibly omnipotent, perfect, buff, hyperbolic physique men that we see. You know, we want men to kind of be something we recognize in life. And I think men do, too.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah.
lot of pressure on
I
men to have to aspire
yeah.
to this. I mean, God, you guys must be going down to the gym every day if you watch Hollywood films. Good Lord.
Yes, but that's true. But on the other hand, I think for men, it's a sort of more acceptable in film to have flaws, you know, to not, you know, look perfect or to have character flaws. Or so. It's much more acceptable than for women. I mean, you just cannot really have, you know, middle-aged women who don't have perfect bodies in Hollywood films. I mean,
You
just don't see it, do you?
Yes.
Well, I was going to say, isn't it equally true that that men are stereotyped in Hollywood films?
Of course, they are. But I would say, in much more empowering ways.
Uh-huh.
Everywhere men look in the world, they see affirmations of their potential to do things, to achieve things, to exert their power over other people and you know, be effective in the world. What women see is simply, you better look good. And that's your main source of self-esteem.
But I'm interested that even in female-oriented genres like rom-coms or female buddy movies, you still get, I mean, I guess you still get a misrepresentation of females. Why would that be if women would prefer authentically represented
people? Well, first, because not all women are feminists, first of all. Uh-huh. Just like not all males are sexist. But also, if they want to work in this industry, they better toe the line. They better play by the rules.
No, I mean, I guess my question really is, why isn't it the case that the audience demand more authentic representations in genres that are specific to them?
Because it's just everywhere. You know, this kind of representation of women and what women should be and what women's lives should be, it's just everywhere. It's just ubiquitous. And it's very, very easy to be uncritical. I don't mean that we're subjected to this and we have to be uncritical, but it's very easy to go along with it. It's also quite pleasant. And a lot of those films, those rom-coms that you're talking about, you know, they're nice films. Uh-huh. And you know, we want to watch this, we want to be entertained. But at the same time, and we should be aware of this, there's nothing wrong with watching them, but we should be aware that there is a particular message that is being brought across.
So.
And sometimes it's very easy just to forget it and simply to be entertained, but we have to be critical at the same time.
Yes, I completely agree with Anya. I mean, if I thought that women were already capable of this kind of criticism, I wouldn't be writing this book.
So
I wouldn't teach film studies.
Consciousness raising. In other words, women don't really know that there's alternatives available or other ways of looking at things and other than what Hollywood is telling them.
I think they consume that kind of media, they contribute to its production.
And I think there's a wider feminist issue at stake here. This is why a lot of people do think, and a lot of women think, that feminism is redundant. Mm-hmm. Simply because we're always told, well, but everything's fine. You know, look, you know, you find women in high-paying jobs. You know, everybody's equal. Everything's fine. Everything has been achieved. But that's not the
only
case.
Only if you toe the line, it's okay. Yeah.
Well,
Why is a stock figure such as a femme fatale a male construct? And what would a feminist femme fatale look like?
Well, first, if you look at the films of the mid to late 40s, early 50s, which is the film noir period, those directors who are making those films are males.
Right.
Furthermore, those women, it has been theorized anyway, that they represent a new kind of anxiety that had crept into American society following the war, because men came home and they found women being both sexually and economically independent, because they'd been out of the home working. They might have had affairs while men were at war. That was threatening. Uh-huh. And so she's a figure that represents those anxieties.
So it's a representation of male anxieties. Okay, what would a feminist femme fatale look like?
Well, I think very much like Catherine Tremell in Basic Instinct.
Okay.
Or perhaps
she's
like
Catherine
Bridget
Tremell
Gregory
being
in The Last Seduction.
Sharon Stone character, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe you want to mention why Basic Instinct is a feminist film, in your opinion.
Well, maybe just to back up a little bit and say, you know, the femme fatale in the classic film noir, she would be an object of sexual attraction to the main male protagonist, the detective hero. But she would also be one that seduces him into bad deeds and is dangerous to him. Mm-hmm. And so his job was to investigate a woman and investigate a crime. And if the woman led him into bad deeds, first of all, his own guilt would be transposed onto her. And secondly, he would punish her in the narrative. She would usually have to die for it. This was also going along with the compensating moral values of the Hays Code, which was the, you know, censorship that was alive in Hollywood at the time. But a neo-noir film reverses some of those conventions and is very ironic in its awareness of those codes and conventions and in playing with them and kind of making fun of them. And so Sharon Stone as a femme fatale, you know, again, we have a story, Basic Instinct, where there's a male protagonist played by Michael Douglas, and he's investigating a crime, the murder of Johnny Boz, this rock star, by we don't know who, but possibly a woman, and he's investigating Sharon Stone as a suspect. Normally, she'd be punished within the narrative, but in this narrative, she isn't, and in fact, it's implied that he is.
Okay.
So Tara, do you think of that film as really a feminist film? Because, you know, she's still objectified, isn't she? I mean, she's still exposed to the male gaze, wouldn't you say?
She's actually Not exactly. First of all, her sexual agency is very important to the film.
Yeah.
She's not ashamed at all of her sexual agency.
No,
every time they try to make her be ashamed of it and say, oh, you're cold, she just basically turns it back on them and shows that it's a double standard. You're so cold. You're the one who's a sexual agent and has no feelings. Then why can't I be? I thought this was hilarious that lesbians and feminists protested this film as if it was some kind of assault on women, because the religious right were also assaulting it as an assault on family values and their conservative values, mm-hmm. which were sexist and homophobic. I thought it was hilarious.
Finally, on this section, would you be happy, either of you or both of you, would you be happy if there were feminist films running alongside Hollywood formula films? Or is the Hollywood ideological template more like an insult which you cannot suffer and so must eradicate? I mean, will you only be happy when the Hollywood formula has been rewritten?
No, I mean, I think pluralism is where it's at. You
absolutely.
Know, you know, just
absolutely.
As many different viewpoints, perspectives, uh-huh. and kinds of making films as possible. I think that would be ideal.
So as long as there is a voice that can be heard
indeed.
Among the other voices, that's enough.
Yeah. As a liberal, I don't want to ban anything that offends me.
Oh, okay, no. Good. So we're going to have the next track now, which I think is Tupac. Hello, I'm Grant Bartley from Philosophy Now magazine, and you're listening to the Philosophy Now radio show. I'm here with Terry Murray, author of Feminist Film Theory, A Teacher's Guide, and Anya Steinbauer, President of Philosophy for All in London, and we're discussing feminist film theory. Now I want to hone in on some possible criticisms which could be made of this theory. So first, going out to both of you, if the media don't reflect gender differences which naturally exist or exist naturally, then how and why could they come to portray the differences in the way that they do if the differences there weren't natural differences between men and women?
Well, you know, the question is whether there are, you know, what are the natural differences apart from the sort of obvious biological differences?
Uh-huh.
This is where we have to go back, perhaps even to Simone de Beauvoir, you know,
okay.
the difference between sex and gender. I mean,
right.
there are some differences that are very obvious, the biological ones, and the rest, well, Simone de Beauvoir would say, is a matter of culture. She says woman is not born but made. So what kinds of differences are actually reflected in films? Well, differences that are either seen as desirable or, you know, as that ought to be in place, or differences that are in place because the culture is such that they are. But, you know, this may not be what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, and maybe there should be more exploration of what is a woman, what should a woman be, what can we be?
Okay, I think about that. Okay, it's certainly true that the possibilities of what we all could be is not, you know, not known, but what I guess I'm basically saying is that in society it seems that the roles between men, the differences between men and women and their relationships seem to have developed naturally, and although you say along with Simone de Beauvoir that this is purely a development of culture, I would say isn't culture rather a reflection of or an extension of the biological differences?
No. I mean, culture is a matter of values and history. I mean, it's not a matter of nature. It's not an evolution. But, you know, there are all kinds of power structures, you know, historical accidents and all kinds of forces that are at play.
So that implies biological determinism, as
indeed.
If we don't have any free will or any actual responsibility for the world that we construct.
But well, I don't think I want to imply determinism. Just like a tendency to go down a certain pattern of things.
I mean, in my book, this is picking up from what Anya is suggesting, that those differences are a product of culture rather than a product of nature. In my book, I ask, you know, what would the standard Hollywood film audience be if 99% of the films portrayed women in roles whereby they were assertive, decisive protagonists who drive the action of the narrative,
mm-hmm.
who are, you know, central to the story, to the plot, who are dangerous and threatening to other characters. Would we live in a different world? Well, we don't know because we've never had that world yet. But a more generic answer to your question is I think narcissism and the kind of pleasures that go with it are universally human.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that men have had the chance to make films that appeal to their own narcissistic pleasures.
And women haven't had the same chance.
Right.
Okay. I mean, coming on from what we've just been saying, what would you say to filmmakers who say that they're just reflecting the way the world is and it's not in their interest to try and send a revolutionary message which most of their audience won't relate to? Are you asking them to be unrealistic in the way they represent the division of roles and character types between men and women? Perhaps they might say that you're being the unrealistic ones here.
No, I think we're just asking them not to be simplistic. Uh-huh. You know, the world is not a simple place, and reality is complex. And I think film should ultimately reflect that too.
Mm-hmm. And we're not in any position to tell people what kind of films to make. I mean, they can continue making completely boring, simplistic films if they want to. I would rather urge consumers to stop consuming this so that shit won't get made, if I may use that word on the program.
Yeah, consumer. Oh, that's a bit of a dirty word. Supposing you were a feminist director and you had a $20 million budget for an action movie, and we wanted a nice female lead, what would a feminist lead in an action movie look like? And would it be commercial? Would it appeal to, like, the demographic to which these films are made, which is, I think, 15-year-old males is the main demographic, isn't it? Or is there some alternative?
I think she'd look a lot like the character Mace, played by Angela Bassett, in the film Strange Days, Catherine Bigelow's film.
Right.
Here's a tough woman who's driving the action, who's saving the male damsel in distress, who's fighting against other tough women and tough men, who is cool and calm under pressure. Or perhaps a little bit like Salander, this character in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Uh-huh. Of course, this had to come from Sweden, because Hollywood, when they remake it, God forbid what that's going to look like.
Okay. Yes, but she could also look completely different. I mean, you know, a proper female protagonist could also be completely different from what you'd expect. She could be, a 55-year-old unattractive woman in a wheelchair who nonetheless is very, very intelligent and is assertive in her own way.
Okay, both of you, how would you hope Hollywood will change under the force of a feminist critique, assuming that there is no change in basic assumptions about women's nature in Western culture?
Well, I'm not going to hold my breath about Hollywood.
No?
No, me neither. I know it won't change, but I think the only thing that can make it change is educating the consumer. To get the consumer not to pay to see rubbish that insults them. So that's why I'm a teacher, not a director.
Okay, so as feminists, your hope isn't really with Hollywood. It's with, like, independent filmmakers with a wider view. But we know that they're not going to be as commercially successful as Hollywood. So what is really the incentive?
Well, as Terry says, it's education, it's expectations, you know, and especially, I think, educating young girls, you know, wanting to see other things, you know, wanting to see other representations of what they're like or their futures are like.
Yes, I mean, unless they're exposed to it, they're not going to have a taste for it. If you've been raised on McDonald's all your life, you're not going to start eating filet mignon, are you?
Okay, I see. Well, finally, I just want to ask you, what contribution could feminist theory make to making great movies?
Oh, boy.
Okay, do you have another hour?
Yeah,
I've got
a minute.
Awareness. I would hope that the awareness would filter through to those people who are in creative roles, who have some power to actually influence the narrative and the look of the film.
But, I mean, what contribution would if I'm a director, would my awareness of feminist issues make to me making a great movie?
Well, to explore possibilities of female protagonists, as we've just discussed.
Okay, I see. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's feminist film theory. Scratched the surface of it, at least. Okay, but I know these ladies, they've both got things going on that they'd like to present to the viewers. Terry, is there anything that you'd like to plug for the viewers here?
Well, I just want everyone to buy my book.
Okay, which is?
Feminist Film Studies, Teacher's Guide.
How can they get hold of that?
It's published by Auteur. It's available on Amazon.
Okay.
Also, I'd like to just say a little plug for my college where I teach, Hampstead College of Fine Arts and Humanities in London. It's a great place to learn for A-level students. So that's really all I have to plug.
Okay, and you've got various things going on.
I've got a lot of philosophical projects going.
Okay.
But I'd like to say, read Terry's book. It's a great book. Really, you should. Yes, well, what am I doing? Well, I'm president of Philosophy for All, as Grant has said, and that is an organization that's trying to bring philosophy to the general educated public in London. We've got a lot of philosophy events, lectures, philosophy debates, philosophical walks, Feminism Forum, and Philosophical Film Club, and various other things going. So look us up on our website, which is pfllondon.org. I'm also now the co-founder of a wonderful project. I'm very happy, very privileged to be involved in this, the London School of Philosophy. It's the first adult education college entirely dedicated to the study, exploration, and teaching of philosophy. We're based and we work in association with Conway Hall in Red Lion Square. And again, please look us up on our website. There are a lot of philosophy courses, something for everyone. The website is londonschoolofphilosophy.org.
And that's not a degree course, is it? That's just generally anybody who's interested in philosophy.
It is just entirely self-motivated. So, we're not going to give you a certificate, we're not going to give you a degree, but we're going to philosophize with you. And I think that's what matters.
And you can study philosophy and film, can't you?
You can, and also philosophy and the theatre.
There you go, everything that you could possibly wish in philosophy terms. so the websites, once again, are philosophyforall.com.
pfalondon.org.
pfalondon.org.
And londonschoolofphilosophy.org.
And yours, Terry, is?
Hampstead College of Fine Arts.
Okay, and that was the Philosophy Now radio show on feminist film theory. Next week, we're going to do God. We've got a Muslim, a Christian and an atheist. They're going to do a reasonable battle in the studio over whether God exists. And finally, I'd just like to mention that my books are The Meta-Revolution and Love, Solitude and Destruction, which you can get online. OK, thank you. So we'll hopefully you'll be listening next week to God.